Welcome to The Weekly Option, the podcast for people interested in trading stock options. Each week, we cover trade ideas and opportunities in the stock market right now. Whether you're a beginner, a professional, or just curious about options, this is the show for you. Let's get started. Welcome to The Weekly Option. I'm your host, Eric, and I'm looking forward to taking you on this journey with me as I trade my own portfolio and discuss options with you each and every week. Now, this episode is special because this is episode number one, and you, my friend, are listening to my very first episode for this podcast. Now, I used to have a podcast a couple years ago with another trader that I used to work with. We worked at the same company together, and he and I ran a podcast for just shy of a year. And it was starting to get popular. We decided to part ways, and this is my first foray back into the podcast world. So I'm looking forward to it. I really do enjoy teaching, and sort of like having your own little radio show. So thanks again for listening, and let's dive in. Now, the topic for this episode is Tales from the Floor, and I'd like to give a little bit of an intro so you have an idea of who you're listening to. In the upcoming weeks, we'll normally have a topic for the episode, and we'll give any announcements that are needed, and we'll dive into trades. These first handful of podcasts are going to be very unique. And this one, like I said, I plan to give a little bit of an introduction so you know who you're listening to. And in the next few podcasts after this, I'm going to be going through or going over some of the strategies that I'll use to create income. At least if I give you a base of knowledge, then we all will hopefully be on the same page and we can move forward with different ways to make money. So that's why I'm here, and I'm sure that's what you're listening to me to find out about. So we'll just go ahead and get started. So on today's episode, like I said, I want to give a little bit about my background. I am finishing up 10 years of being in the energy business, but I got my start in finance back in 2001 when I accepted an offer to go and learn how to trade options and work as a clerk at a company based in Chicago. It was one of the largest option market-making firms in the business. We had guys in London and Germany and New York and the multiple exchanges in Chicago, and we had crews of people in San Francisco as well as some internal hedge funds. So it was a great place to learn. We had a very structured learning process, and basically spent the day on the floor of the Chicago Board Options Exchange, otherwise known as the CBOE. And in the evenings, we actually went to class. They had us in a class. We had homework. We had lectures. We had quizzes. We had pop quizzes. And we also had tests. Now, the beauty of all of this was, A, we had to learn. I mean, it was our job to learn options and options trading. And they taught us the theory and then allowed us to spend the day working with various traders who were implementing that theory day in, day out. And what's so important about this, or about that fact, is this. I know a lot of people who have been studying options. They've read books, they'll watch different courses, and they just learn, and they don't actually start trading. And the problem with that is, you know, it's like learning a new language. You won't learn to speak Spanish by reading a book and studying Spanish in your own country. You learn that language, if it's Spanish, for instance, by actually speaking it. And it's uncomfortable at first, and you make mistakes at first, but you learn. And so what I'm going to challenge you guys to do along with me is, over the course of time, I'm going to ask you to, you know, send in your questions. Send in the questions you have. I want you trading. You don't have to trade the trades that I'm trading, but I'd at least love to have the dialogue so that if you have questions about your trading, if you have questions about positions, we can discuss them. And maybe if you even have a position that you give me permission to discuss on air, we'll cover it right on air and give you some great education, hopefully some great insight about the risk and reward of the positions that you're trading. So just to go back to my story. So, you know, there are a lot of tales that I could tell from my years on the floor. I was on the floor of the CBOE from 2001 through options expiration of 2006. I remember that day very specifically. I also spent a brief period of time, about 7 months, at the Philadelphia Stock Exchange, which was not my favorite, and I quit and went back to Chicago with another firm that gave me a lot of great experience and allowed me to have some fun while making some money. So on the exchanges, you tend to have these young traders, and it tends to be a place that's full of a lot of testosterone, a lot of guys, you know, kind of bumping each other and, you know, telling stories, a high ego. A lot of times companies were looking for Division I athletes to come in and be a floor trader. I mean, it was a very physical job in that you had to stand there all day. You had to be willing to you had to be bold. You couldn't be physically intimidated by anyone, whether you were a 5'8", you know, smaller guy, or you were a 6'5", you know, Division I linebacker. Like, either way, you had to be willing to go down there and open your mouth and make markets and make trades. And your company, you represented your company, and or you represented your own book of business, and you would eat, you know, I mean, you ate what you killed. So you had to make money. It was a competitive environment, and it was fantastic. I realized very quickly that it was a world that didn't force you to grow up either. I mean, I could tell you some crazy, crazy things that I witnessed down there. Some of the stories, you know, the bets, the dares. So essentially, when the markets got quiet, I mean, in theory, you know, you think these guys are down there all day long, you know, right and left making trades and money moving hands, but there are significant lulls in the activity. And so, you know, we might be standing around and someone will make a bet. You know, it could be as simple as, you know, how many push-ups do you think you can do in 5 minutes? Or it could be how many Krispy Kreme donuts can you eat in an hour, with all sorts of stipulations. Like, one of the ones I remember was a guy said he could eat 50 Krispy Kreme donuts in an hour. And the stipulation was that if he, you know, let's say if he vomited and ate the vomit, then the trade would be on. And if he otherwise, he would lose the bet. He personally had about $5,000 on that bet. Needless to say, at about donut number 48, he had to use that stipulation. It was pretty gross, but he made his money. And I'm telling you, you know, probably $50,000 changed hands that day between other guys betting whether he could or couldn't do it amongst themselves. So, you know, there was always something that you could bet on, something that you'd make a market on. We were quick to tell stories about life, quick to challenge each other and put money behind it. And, you know, ultimately there was a lot of camaraderie, and it was fun. But at the same time, you could be standing there and watching The Price is Right, and suddenly you're having to make a market on a 1,000 lot of straddles on an index. You're moving notional volumes into multiple millions of dollars, and having to price the markets correctly and having to hedge and manage your risk immediately. That was the game. And so you just learned. You learned to keep your mind going. And, you know, work was work and play was play. And we were able to enjoy it all down there on the floor. One of the things I really like that's missing in the electronic world is that, you know, when you're standing face to face with the guys who are both your comrades and your competition, there are a lot of, like, there's a culture, there's a subtle way of doing things. Your word was your bond, right? We were trading an open outcry form, and you might make a trade with a guy way across the pit from you, and you might confirm it with the hand signal. Both of you put on a hedge, and it was automatically assumed that you both knew. You might check the trade later at the end of the day, but even if that trade moved, whether you made money on it or lost money on it, you had to acknowledge that you did the trade. I mean, it was just a place where it thrived on honesty. The moment honesty was gone, then you would, the very foundation that place was built on would crumble. So it was great. It was a great place to learn. Like I said, I mean, you live by your word, and when you're a new trader, oftentimes you make mistakes. You might get nervous and make a market out loud that's wrong, and you have to honor that, meaning some of the guys next to you, you know, might tell you, no, you've got to trade that market, and you know, you trade for a smaller size, but you did the trade because you opened your mouth, which you're supposed to do, and you stated what you meant. And even if it was a mistake, you know, you went ahead and hedged it and you moved on. But you learned. I mean, I'm sure you guys know from other areas of life, you know, most of our greatest learnings tend to come from our losses or our mistakes, not our wins. So I'm always cautious when I meet traders who are quick to tell you about all of their big wins, you know, show you the big flashy watch or whatever. Most of the guys I know, even the guys that have, you know, the nicest homes, the yachts, the flashy cars, the everything, you know, those guys will also tell you about their losses, you know, the battle scars, if you will. You know, we've all got battle scars. I remember one day, you know, in my first year of trading, coming upstairs after a day of trading and just looking sick. And you know, my manager or the owner of the company actually asked me about the position. I showed him my position, and you know, it was down 250 grand on day one. And normally the way losses work is if you lose 250 on day one, you're probably losing half a mil the next day. Like, they don't trail off. They tend to get bigger before they get smaller. And he looked at the position and he said, "What do you think is happening in this market?" And I told him, you know, I'm short volatility. I think it's going to come off. But, you know, I also was kind of hedging my words because I didn't want to have to eat $1 million or $2 million loss that week. And he looked at it and he said, "You know what, Eric, I believe in you and I agree." And the next day he added to the position. So now my heart's thumping because he added to that position to show me that he believed in me. 2 days later, we made roughly 600 grand on that trade. Now, remember, it came after losing $250,000. When the account was up 600, you know, and that position was closed out at expiration, I can tell you it felt good, but it still stung. The loss, the feeling of loss that day still hurt. And if you've never traded and you've never lost money, it's hard to tell you what it's like. But I can tell you that losing is part of this game. You just can't stay wrong, number one. So when you realize you're losing, you have to make another decision to either get out of the trade or alter the trade. The third way is just stay in it. If you believe in that trade, you stay in it and ride that trade and just be ready for, you know what your maximum loss is going to be. But, you know, at the end of the day, it was just the joy of winning never overcame the pain of that loss. And I learned to live with that, you know. Winning is awesome. But, man, I hate to lose. I really hate to lose. And I'm sure many of you are that same way. You have that competitive nature, and you almost get that sort of that sort of dry taste in your mouth when you lose. And I mean, I can almost feel sick to my stomach today thinking about that loss, but man, it made me a stronger trader knowing that the partner of the firm, it was a two-partner firm, knowing that one of the partners believed in me enough to add to my trade was awesome. It was fantastic. So, you know, again, the floor was a great place to learn. And then I went to business school, got my MBA at the University of Chicago, and decided I would transition from the floor. I mean, let's face it, back in 2006 when I left, the writing had been not only on, it wasn't even spray painted on the wall. The writing was etched into the wall. Open outcry is going to end. And so I wanted to add another, get some more education or add a bit more pedigree to prepare myself for trading off the floor. So I did that, got my MBA at University of Chicago, and then ended up moving into the energy business. I'm a Texas kid. Even though I was in Chicago for a period, I was ready to come home. And I entered the energy business in 2007, working for an investment bank in Houston. And by 2008, during the financial crisis, I was out of that investment bank. Yeah, fun times. But that ultimately led to me moving to, leaving the state once more and getting a job with one of the largest commodity traders in the world, which was amazing. They taught me all about physical trading. They taught me about the fundamental side of analyzing the markets, you know, really diving into fundamental analysis, which is something I didn't have to do. It's something I didn't do as a floor trader at the CBOE. Trading options, for the most part, is all about, you know, having a model that gives you a theoretical price for those options that you like. So every day I'd come into the office and, you know, I'd look at where volatility had traded the day before and what my expectation was today. And the way that you go about figuring out what volatility was before is you use the implied volatility of the at-the-money straddles, the call and the puts that traded the previous day. Implied volatility is the volatility that is used or that's needed in order to replicate the price that's being shown in the market. So we would always sort of adjust our models to reflect what we think, where we thought volatility really was. So if I thought volatility was lower than where the market was selling, what was pricing it, then I would sell those options and expect to have the opportunity to buy the options back when volatility was lower. And likewise, if I thought volatility was higher, then I would look to buy options and allow them to, you know, allow my portfolio to benefit or increase in value up to the place where I think volatility really is. So we're not going to talk that much about volatility. I'm not going to go super crazy into the different Greeks on this show. To be honest, I think if you are a sort of a mom and pop investor, if you're trading from home and, you know, you're not slinging millions of options around each month, then, you know, I have different feelings, but I'm not certain that you really need to discuss or worry about the Vega, the Rho, the Gamma of your positions. But we will talk about Delta some, and, you know, Gamma plays its part for sure. I mean, they all play their part. It's just that, at the end of the day, I like to focus on where I make money and where I lose money. And so if you focus on those two things and you know, your position, like the back of your hand, meaning you have an option trade on and you say, okay, at this price, this is the price where I got in. At this price, I'm losing money. At this price, I'm making money. So here's my break even. If it gets near my break even, this is what I'm going to do. Like, you create your whole plan. I think that you can really make something that's complex like option trading and make it fairly simple so that you can just, you know, make money. Leave the modeling and all of that to the quantitative hedge funds and the guys who are trading, you know, $1 million portfolios of options. If you've got a one lot of a call spread on, I don't care about your gamma. You shouldn't care about your gamma. Know your break-even points. Know where you're going to make money. And that's the kind of way we're going to focus on this show. So, but going back to fundamental analysis, you know, I learned a lot. It allowed me to focus back on my economics degree. I was an economics major in my undergrad, and it was just pure supply and demand. You know, what do we expect commodities to do in this part of the world versus that part of the world? And it was great. I also got to trade some options for that company as well. And it led to another reminder. We'll call it a reminder of a lesson. And that lesson is that no one will ever watch your position the way you watch your position. What I mean by that is if you're in a trade and something happens and you need someone else to watch your position for you, they don't care about your position the way you care about it, even if you work for the same company. Even if you're being paid out of the same bonus pool, they might not even understand the position the way you understand it. And I ended up in a situation where I was long puts, ended up putting on a put spread. We thought the market was going lower in crude. I bought puts. They were actually tied up, meaning I bought puts and also bought futures with those puts. So it was a hedged position. And my counterpart, who was more senior than me, said, well, we want to actually benefit from the price moving down. So let's get rid of those futures that came with the trade. So now I'm long naked puts. Okay, that's fine. You know, we'll make a decent amount of money if the market goes down. And then there was some protest over the weekend, over a long weekend in Egypt. And it continued. And one of the things that hurt was the fact that I left the country for this long weekend as well, thinking my position was fully being taken care of by my colleague. When I got back, well, I knew about it in Brazil. It actually kind of ruined my trip when I was out of the country. I returned to a small loss, but a loss nonetheless. And what was most frustrating is that had I stayed, had I kept the futures that were bought to offset the downside risk with those puts that I bought, had I kept those, the position would have made money right off the bat, and I would have gone from zero to hero in a heartbeat. Instead, I returned to a desk wearing zero, or even worse than zero, negative, and spent the next week or so trading out of that position. You know, I got back to flat by ultimately shorting a straddle. I felt like the oftentimes when news events happen, volatility will spike. Some traders will get scared and close positions. But on the floor, we got used to selling volatility and just watching it. I mean, we were there to watch our positions all day long. So I reverted to some of my habits, some of my earlier lessons, and I sold that high volatility. Sure enough, volatility came on back in a couple points, and I made my money back, but not without once again having that, you know, sickening feeling in your stomach and another lesson, another reminder. So one of the things that I'll always talk about is, you know, when you have to know what you're trading. If you're trading volatility, then you want to minimize your risk exposure to price. If you're trading price, then you want to make sure that that you have a position that's going to benefit based on a directional move in the options. So that's the joy of options, though. There are a lot of different ways you can adjust your portfolio and really get the sort of exposure that you're looking to benefit from in the market. So I love options, and I'm really super excited to be back in the game doing an options podcast. So hopefully you guys hear my excitement. Go ahead and subscribe to the show. Listen to some of the other episodes as well. Like I said, the next couple episodes, we're going to be discussing the strategies that I like to use the most in order to create income each month trading options. And I definitely want you to have an understanding so that you can follow along right with me and hopefully have the same success. And, you know, maybe even some of you can email me and send me trades that you guys like, and, you know, send it to me on a Friday. You know, maybe we'll be able to put it on air over the weekend and follow it and track it and see how it trades, and also discuss, you know, the ways that we can adjust it if it starts to create a loss. So anyway, that's it. Once again, this is Eric going to be signing off. In the coming weeks as well, we're going to have a contest. There are a bunch of books that I love that talk about option trading, And I probably will have a contest where you guys can subscribe to the show and share this with some friends. And, you know, the winner of that contest will get a stack, at least two books that I really love, and probably a couple more to take you even deeper than what I'm going to be able to discuss on this show. So that's it for now. This is Eric signing off. Thanks again for having a listen. Welcome to The Weekly Option. Thank you for listening to The Weekly Option podcast. Please subscribe to our show and visit us at www.theweeklyoption.com. Disclaimer, there is a very high degree of risk involved in trading. The indicators and strategies described in this podcast are for educational purposes only and should not be construed as investment advice. For our full disclaimer, visit our website at www.theweeklyoption.com.